This is CKUW 95.9 FM. Our mission is to engage the campus and the community through radio with a vision of having a radio-driven campus and community. We rely on your input. Join our volunteer team or give us your feedback at 204-786-9782 or by visiting ckuw.ca.
The following is an encore presentation from CKUW's archives. Join us next week when the regular host will be back with a new episode of original programming.
Picture frames, troubled youth and carelessness, the spell uncast, the morning kiss, the final break, the starting block, the garbage littered parking lots, the tapping on the window pane, it's only autumn rain. Bird outside my window calling, it's only autumn rain falling.
Good morning, folks. If it's Friday and if it's 11 a.m., you're listening to the Hope Alley of No Fixed Address Show, the show that advocates for those who cannot speak for themselves. We're at CKUW 95.9 FM, your community radio station, right here at the University of Winnipeg. You did not hear my theme song because we have a issue with the computer today, but that happens. We're going to do something different today. We don't have a guest on, but I don't know, about 4 years ago, 5 years ago, I wrote a piece on poverty called Poverty Dimensions, and it goes through thank you, Debbie, adjusting my mic. it goes through traumatic experiences that a person has to endure living in the area of poverty. And What brought this up is National Film Board or a filmmaker working with National Film Board is doing a piece on poverty, and it's how detrimental it is to people's lives and to the healthcare system and to the country as a whole. And so that brought this back to mind, and as I dug it up out of my computer, and Russ going to be using it at some poverty reduction teachings for nursing students. And actually, we're doing one with the city of Winnipeg in a week after next, which is going to be very interesting. Having some of the city councilors and bureaucrats listen to what poverty is all about. And we're going to give them some sort of budgetary lessons as well on what it takes to get by when you're struggling in poverty. So Debbie and I, my much valued and appreciated producer, are going to be talking about poverty dimensions. We may end the show a little bit early today. I'm not sure. We'll see how the conversation goes. But again, you're listening to CKUW 95.9 FM right here at the University of Winnipeg. And the temperature, I think, was 14 when I came here this morning. I'm just going to check what time. 19 degrees out right now, getting warm. And a high of, I know it's supposed to go up to 20-something again, maybe. 23, high of 23 degrees. Talk about a good September, October so far. It's been amazing weather. All right, so we're going to talk about poverty dimensions, and I'm just going to read from the piece because it's about 3 pages long, and I have not memorized it. And so,
and then from time to time, I'll try and get a conversation going.
Absolutely, I always enjoy our conversations with Debbie when we speak on the show. So, poverty dimensions. Living in poverty is living in trauma, and living in trauma is living on the edge every day of one's life. While in poverty, at times and many times as traumatic as homelessness is poverty, and it's so responsible for record deficits within the healthcare system. And what we're going to go through below are examples of what poverty and the trauma of poverty looks like, and what people living beneath the poverty line have to endure. Trauma of poverty is, and feel free to Deb to jump in anytime, is, and this is one of the more trying things, is collecting beer cans. I had to go out at 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning so I would not be seen, because I did not want people to see me actually out there rummaging through blue recycling bins and things like that in the back alley.
Right.
And that was, I hated that. Trauma of poverty is collecting beer cans in the last 10 days of the month, getting out every morning at 5:30 a.m., rifling through recycling bins and back lanes to find enough for milk and a few needed items, whether it's plus 30 or minus 30.
Right, regardless of the weather.
Regardless.
And, this brought up something interesting. Somebody we both know that I won't name right now, just because it's not relevant.
Yeah, no.
Approached me because there's a community group that does a lot of good work that uses collected cans as a fundraiser. And this person wondered if the place I live, which is a housing co-op, might collect cans. And I thought, that's hard. We have like 10 different recycled bins and getting people to change their habits. But the other thing that I thought was even more important is that my window of my unit is right over
the bins,
and I hear people at 5:30 in the morning going through and collecting, and I'm thinking, okay, who needs the cans more, those folks or the community group?
We really, really good points. And and it's a race in the morning sometimes at 5:30 to get to those beer cans.
You're in competition.
You're in competition.
Yeah.
And the further along I got, the years, a couple of years, the worse it got. There's so many people out there collecting beer cans at 5:30, 6 o'clock. If you go out at 7 o'clock in the morning, you're dead. You might find a dollar or two, but you try to at least find $5 or $6 worth, or get lucky, and find a case of empty 24s or one or two. That's a good day, or two or three. I remember one time, my very best day collecting cans was way down in the North End, close to Arlington, and there's a big dumpster there, and I am loath to go into dumpsters, but I looked in and saw a whole pile. It was, and for some reason, Char was with me that day. She never comes, but it's so cold. It was like minus 30. It was really cold. You froze your fingers and everything. But I jumped in and found $32 worth of cans.
Oh, my.
$32. That made our week, you know?
That was a good. That was a real. That was red letter day. You circled that one on the calendar, hey?
That was a red letter day.
Yeah.
And
if people who have not lived in poverty have no idea how expensive it is to live in poverty, right?
It is.
I mean, all the work you have to do to get $5, let alone $32.
Yeah, and entirely. And, so we had to scavenge around, and Char went to a Dollarama and bought a couple of big green bags because there's so many cans in there that we had to carry home. And the problem is, too, is if there's bottles, say there's three cases of 12s, how do you carry all that? You want the money, but it's hard to carry bottles because it's so heavy, right?
Right, the cans are lighter,
The cans are lighter. And, you know, that's just one, that's one of the, probably one of the more trying things, you know, but you're desperate. And many times, I would go in a blizzard sometimes, and just because we're so desperate. And then the second part of collecting is you got to go to the vendor.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got to stand there for a while and wait while others take their turns cashing in their beer cans, or whether other, you know, people are buying beer. You usually wait around for 20 minutes maybe before you can go do that. And then they don't allow you to put your cans in the flats out inside, so you have to go outside, and then the wind blows and blows your cans all over. You got to start. It's just something that people have no idea about.
If you haven't done it, then you have no insight into that at all.
No. So it's miserable. But, you know, sometimes it's more bearable than wintertime, but sometimes in that, you know, minus 40 wind chill thing, it's pretty uncomfortable.
Yeah, the metal's cold. The glass is cold.
Yeah, for sure. Running out of minutes on your payphone as you go phone 5 days before welfare check comes in, then running out of change for a payphone and having no communication. This is really, really hard because when you're trying to get through the harvest, it's not that same way anymore. They've adjusted it, so it's automatic. Once you're in the system, you just automatically go. But they used to have, you used to have to phone.
Every time.
And if you're out of phone minutes, and you can't really use your phone on phone minutes because you get put on hold for...
Exactly, for hours.
Yeah, for a very long time. So you go to payphone and keep dropping quarters in after quarter after quarter after quarter, hoping you can get through. It's horrible. And food, which is a basic need, you have to do this. And thank goodness that they've changed that. I don't know, maybe,
although it's still hard. I volunteered at a food bank. We were just there yesterday with a newcomer who was brought by an immigrant friend. There were immigrants, and it was brought by a friend, and this friend had not explained that you have to register the first time you go to
a food bank. You have to register the first time, and the best thing is to go down to the office.
And then giving the phone number and then having to wait, right?
And the best thing is to actually go down to the office and book an appointment there if you can get there. Mm. And for me, it was a long walk from where I was all the way down to Winnipeg Avenue and McPhillips from downtown. But the best thing is just go there and they'll set you up, and they may even give you an emergency box or food or something.
Right,
bag of
right.
Food or
when
something.
You show up in person register.
You show up in person. But otherwise, it's a thankless, really frustrating.
It's tough to do,
ordeal.
And it's tough for people who don't speak English as a first language.
That's another barrier.
Yeah. And I just one more question that, though. When you say payphones, I haven't seen payphones in a long time.
They've taken a lot of payphones out, and that's a detriment, too. That's a barrier, too. There are payphones around, but they've probably removed 80% of them.
Yeah.
Again, just, this is where corporate doesn't understand poverty. You know, and people need payphones, and you really have to search for them now. And it's again, it seems like everything the city does, everything the province does, everything corporate does, is creates more barriers than the other way around, then more benefits. And this is just one of those.
Yeah, so the corporate decisions just contribute to this expanding
entirely
gap between the extremely well-paid and the people who are in desperate poverty, right?
Entirely, and the whole thing is, too, it's like, I think it started during COVID because they didn't want people using payphones.
Yeah.
But it's a complete barrier to a lot of people who don't have cell phones and don't want to spend $30 or can't, or $15-$20 a month and can't spend it. It's a harsh reality, and there aren't very very many free phones around. There are some places, but there aren't anymore. I used to go to the free phones when I was homeless in the Rady Center on the second floor at, you know, by HSE. Mm-hmm. And they had two free phones there, and I used those whenever I had to make a phone call. But there are no more free phones. There are very, very few.
Very hard to find.
Very hard to find.
Yeah.
Everything works against people in poverty. And it's just the way it is. Mm-hmm. And I don't understand why. It's like they don't even try to understand the situation that people get put in. Finding payphones locked during COVID, that was a huge deal. And then they didn't allow people in the malls anyway to use them. They removed all the chairs and all the seating from all the malls. That was a crime. I always keep wondering, okay, where are these people going? Because we didn't see them in the malls anymore. Plenty of payphones locked during COVID, panicking because a call that you would get you $10. There's, I know one or two times in particular, if I would go, I would get a $10 gift card, but I couldn't get through. Mm-hmm. And, you know, stuff like that. And panicking because I couldn't get through and make the call. Standing in line at a food bank for an hour on a busy street, ignoring all the looks that you get from drivers going by. And thank goodness that there are still some you have to, but Calvary Temple now, they've done it for years where you go inside and you're not subject to standing in line on the sidewalk. And that's so embarrassing when you know that people are looking at you. Oh, somebody I know might see me in line, and okay.
Yeah.
That embarrassment of that. And then we'll go again to dropping quarter after quarter after quarter into a payphone to try to get through to Harvest to get the lines. And again, I put down causing physical illness from trauma. And as you don't have enough, food to make it through the payday, there's trauma, especially when you have responsibility. I had responsibility for Char and our two cats. And that created more trauma than being on the street. Because on the street, all I had to look after was me, nobody else. especially when you're dealing with a person with schizophrenia and PTSD, it's really, really difficult. Not making a doctor's appointment because you don't have the bus fare. Common stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't get a bus pass or could not get a bus pass unless you had your doctor lie about it.
Sort of a catch-22.
Yeah. The policy was you have to have four visits a week. Okay. If that was indeed the case and everybody did that, it would bankrupt the healthcare system.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the kind of illogical thinking that the province put into welfare. The doctor actually, for sure, had to actually lie on the paper to get a bus pass. On disability, for crying out loud.
I don't know why we just don't make public transport free.
Yeah, entirely. They can do that too with Calgary has a sliding scale that starts at $100 and goes down to $5. You know.
Yeah, we could do that too.
We could do that too.
Yeah.
Right. Now it's easier at $50, but still. But the one thing about transit now is, other than that horrid system, is that you can take the cash option and present your card and just put $1.25 into the the machine now or whatever, where you put your change. That's one good thing. You don't have to pay the full $265 or $325 or whatever it is. It's one thing they've done right.
So, yeah, just explain that to me again because I wasn't aware of that. So if you have a particular card, you can pay reduced fare.
Yeah, if you have the WinPass, you can show the card or tap it and then just put in $1.35 or whatever it is.
Right. Yeah.
And so that's one good thing that's there that people don't realize. And but then again, to get that WinPass, you have to present your tax information from the previous
and
year.
And who has that?
And who's got that? And then they also ask for proof of income, which is another piece of paper altogether, the option C thing. Present the option C, and you go down there, and the whole thing is this: you go down there, and you hand in your papers, your tax forms, and all that, and you wait, and you wait, and you wait. Then you find your phone to get it, and they say, "Well, you didn't hand in the right paper," but they didn't phone you to tell you. 6 weeks later, nobody phoned you. This is just how stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody phones to let you know that you gave them the wrong information. Nobody tells you at the desk when you're handing it in that you are giving them the wrong information. It's like everything works against people, and it's so frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
Again, making a doctor's appointment, how unhealthy is it to not attend a doctor's appointment? And say for me who...
And they're hard to get, those doctor's appointments.
And they're hard to get. And you may not get another one for 6 weeks. Or you sit around and wait for 2 hours if you don't have an appointment to see any doctor. And I'm really, really lucky to have a doctor who actually calls me when I miss out an appointment or some, because they know I miss things. And I'm diabetic and I need to see the doctor and get my testing done and all that kind of stuff. And sometimes I miss it. And so she calls me and she kind of beats me up on it and says, "You got to get in here." I have the best doctor in the city by far. And she, ironically, she works at the 650 Main, you know, the one right in the core. And but she's the very best. Being rejected for a bus pass, again, we just talked about that.
Mm-hmm.
Why not having the right paperwork? Not being able to make a welfare appointment. That's a tough one, and they don't treat you well. Not being able to make a welfare appointment because you have no bus fare and having your case manager block benefits from going out because you didn't make your appointment, which is, I think, it's cruel.
Cruel.
That's
absolutely
cruel.
There's no other word.
There's no other word, and leaves you penniless for a few more days. Absolute fear of making another appointment with your case manager, knowing that you're going to feel his or her anger. When you're living there, you have a lot of fear because your confidence isn't there, and you're afraid to speak to people, and it just makes it worse. It compounds the situation. And many times you have case managers who have no empathy whatsoever. And they have 175 cases, you know, 175 caseload, and that just creates more problems because they can't
keep up with
they
everybody.
Can't keep up, and then they get testy. And the whole thing about welfare, too, is you have people on welfare who are perhaps homeless or just do not know how to engage. And then that person is all upset and starts speaking to the case manager in a way that they shouldn't because they don't have those people skills. Then, of course, it comes back to them, and they get shut out of things because the case manager takes exception to what they're saying to them and having no empathy for what this person is going through. Mm-hmm. Because so many people living in poverty are going through mental health issues, and it's so hard to have... to have the case managers really understand. I've talked to Rebecca, who's the manager downtown, and Rebecca, Tessa's sister, Rebecca Blakey, and about going in and training staff there. But they're a little bit reluctant to do that, and I'm not sure why, you know, because they have a lot to learn down there.
Well, you know, your topic is all about the trauma of living in poverty and how it's a sort of a recycling trauma.
It
happens over and over and over again, and things amplify each other. And I went to a wonderful workshop. I know that Clinic does workshops for people service providers of all kinds on trauma-informed care.
Yes.
And it seems to me that should be required of absolutely every caseworker.
Without a doubt. 100%. I don't know if they have it or not, but they certainly should. Mm-hmm. And I just not sure what the reluctance is. And like Rebecca said, well, we have workshops for the homeless and for people with lived experience. Where are you getting your knowledge from? Right? Because I hear them talking to people, and it's always in that downwards maternal speak, and I say, you're not doing it right. Because I hear it. And I think are they afraid to have somebody, hit them in the face with the way to do it? I think that might be it. Because very many times the government has this arrogance about them that they know better than everybody else. I like Rebecca a lot, but there's just this hesitancy to have somebody come in and tell them how to do it right. I'm too hard to make a change, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, and a lot of it, as you do in your training, is about stereotypes, attitudes, stigmas.
Yes, and teaching respect and how do we get rid of those stigmas? Mm-hmm. We can't do the best care we can if we're carrying around our stigmas and unconscious biases.
Unconscious bias, that's what I was looking for, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
And so...
Which we all have.
We all do. It's just recognizing that and then, okay, how do we work around that,
Exactly.
If you can't recognize that, then there's...
That's the very first step, just recognizing it for sure.
That's it. And so when I speak to nurses and nursing students and things like this, I'll spend a good hour just on building that respect and saying, this is what you do. How are you going to fix it? Or I'll say to a nurse, speak to this individual and just have them speak to that person. And invariably, it's a person of vulnerability. It'll be like this, like they're 12 and 15 years old. Mm-hmm. And I said, why are you doing that? They're not stupid. Mm-hmm. Why not give them respect and speak to them like I'm speaking to you? It's tough. And, that's why I dedicate so much time and effort to the healthcare system.
Mm-hmm, for sure, yeah.
Here's a tough one, too. Getting a job but not being able to take it as you have no bus fare to get there for 3 weeks before payday. That's a hard one because you know that job's going to make a difference. But, for example, I got a really good paying job with the Free Press. It was selling subscriptions, and you get a nice base, and then you get some really, really good commissions. Because I did this way, way back in the day, and it's a good job. You sit on the phone and you sell people subscriptions. It would have doubled what I made on welfare, but I had no way of borrowing money or anything to get there, and so it costs a lot. That one in particular hurts because you know you can improve your situation, or you don't eat for 3 weeks.
Like there's a little glimmer of hope there, but then there's this barrier.
Yep, and okay, we're going to take all the money for bus fare out of our food budget, and then if I'm working, I don't have time to make that up, beer can collecting. And all that kind of stuff, right? It's just the catch-22 and goes round and round and round. But that's a hard one because everybody wants to work. Everybody wants to make more money, right?
Yes. Yeah, I remember seeing a TED Talk, and I think after the in a moment we should take a break.
Yes,
a little music break, give your voice a rest.
Oh, yeah.
But I remember seeing a TED Talk by a guy, I saw this a long time ago, who just made the point that the simplest treatment for poverty is money.
Yeah. Yes. Absolutely.
And people know what to do when they get money. They know exactly how, there's this prejudice that we have that if people have money, they'll spend it on the wrong things.
Entirely.
And that's completely wrong.
It is wrong. But I will say this. Every payday, I would get myself the biggest breakfast I could handle because this was my treat for the month, right? I go to Sal's and order their hearty breakfast or something. And people say, how can you do that when you have to get through the month? But you also need a mental uplift, right?
And that need to celebrate.
You need to celebrate. simply getting through.
Yeah.
But, some people don't understand that, but you need that. Folks, we're going to take a brief music break. I can't believe we're halfway through already. We're not even going to get through this today.
Okay.
take a music break. You're listening to CKOW 95.9 FM, your community radio station right here at the University of Winnipeg, and we're talking the trauma of poverty. That's all.
Yesterday I found myself thinking of you, of all the things we want to change but mostly never do. And I picture you looking out your window through the rain, though I know it's only my imagination playing games, and I can't help but lose control. I didn't know what I had to lose until I lost it all, and I tell myself there's no one left to take the blame.
Hey, folks, we're back having a little bit of a different show today. You're listening to CKUW 95.9 FM. And the Hope Valley, I'm not fixed at your show. Sorry, I drew a mind blank for a second. But it's 19 degrees, a perfect day. For me, 18, 19, it doesn't get any better than that. But it's kind of dampish out there. It rained last night a bit. Be kind when you're going to Tim's. Extra coffee or water, please. And we're headed to a high of 22 or something. But it's going to be a great, great day out there. But be kind. We're actually talking poverty, the trauma of poverty, and a piece that I wrote a while ago.
The following is an encore presentation from CKUW's archives.
In the NFB National Film Board film coming up really, really soon, and going to be shown at the Manitoba Minimum Income Board AGM. Which is going to be good. Okay, where were we? Going back and forth, not being able to go to, had a heart attack, not being able to go to a physio because they charge for it, waiting for life-saving meds because you could not afford them, and the doctor dropped the ball, and you ended up back in hospital. That was really, really serious hospital said you got to take these every 24 hours, but my doctor dropped the ball on it, and we could not afford the $82 for every 2 weeks for this thing until we got approved. And I ended up back in hospital. It was just the stress of not being able to get this pill.
And that's a really good example of how poverty costs society more.
Yep.
Because it's expensive to treat somebody in hospital compared
Absolutely.
To just giving you the meds.
Absolutely. So, yeah. so you know, it costs, you know, in several ways because I did end up back in the hospital. But the system works against people. And another thing was, it wouldn't have mattered if I could have afforded it. Pay the $82 and that's it. But I had to, and I couldn't understand why the province would not have this as an automatic med.
Right.
Med, because it's a cardiac thing and you need to take it. But in their limited vision, you had to phone in. My doctor phoned once, never got through. It's a 24-hour deal. You get it. Doctor phones, you get through, you get your meds. It took 8 weeks, actually, to get this. And we had to pay 2 weeks, and then the pharmacy had to pay 2 weeks, and then it just dragged on. And I got lucky because I knew the director of the Cardiac Nurses Association of Manitoba because I spoke to their AGM. And finally, she came through. She called the doctor, who's my doctor on the ward when I was in. He got the thing done, and he went to St. Bonaventure's Pharmacy instead of Shoppers. But eventually we got all on track, but... This is poverty. And how quicker would my recovery have been if I'd been able to get therapy?
And how many people don't have your skills, Al, for getting...
That is the key.
And the connections and the
yes.
Okay, this didn't work. What else
yep.
can I do, right?
Exactly. And I bring that up when I talk about this situation. I bring that up. Thanks for bringing that up because it's so important. I have the advocacy skills. And I know people. And all that kind of stuff. What about those people that don't? And they drown in it. And they have no hope. But how many people die because they don't have the advocacy skills? I was lucky I knew Lorraine Avery. And she was a godsend. Now, she's the director of Cardiac Nurse Association. And if I had not spoken to that group 3 months earlier, I may not even be here today. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the problem with poverty and the healthcare system. There's just so many barriers that are created. And why would welfare of the province deny a drug that you have to take every 24 hours to keep your arteries open? I don't understand that stuff. I have great difficulties with that. Going back and forth to the grocery store several times a day. Char would do this many, just to find milk on sale or something else on sale. Maybe this afternoon it'll be on sale again. Yeah, all that walking, you know, just to get a deal. Not buying anything that's not on sale. Backing away from the meat section and the protein section and not getting the protein I desperately needed as a diabetic. So much stuff like that. And then getting something that's on sale and having it not be edible. You know, that happens too. And grocery stores have been known to put stuff that's not edible on the shelves, unfortunately. Collecting beer cans and drive-through change for spending money or groceries. For an out-of-town gig, I was doing training for the Canadian Alliance on Homelessness, and they were not paying upfront expenses, which is horrible. I would just go out and collect, drive-through change and beer can money just to get my cash, right, for spending on food and stuff when I'm gone. And thank goodness I had Kate Kaler from Social Planning Council front money for a couple of my trips. We've had our moments, Kate and I. We don't, stuff lots of times. But she was there for me in the early days when I need to go on a trip and earn that $2,500 or $1,200 or whatever it was to set us on a right path for a while.
So again, that's the biases of people who have steady incomes,
yep.
who have plenty of
yep.
money saved up, that they're used to, I just pay this and then I get reimbursed.
Yes, and they
don't know that not everybody can do that.
And this is the Canadian Alliance on Homelessness, who have lots and lots of money, and they could do this, right?
They could fund you
they
the
could,
money.
They could fund, yeah. it, fund me the money. And one time I went through, it was good at the end of the day. I had 3 gigs in 3 weeks, and I walked away with $5,000, which, you know, set us on a right course. But we also had to be very careful on how we presented that. because we lose all our welfare, we have to do it right so it could be extended, right? Mm. We have to, you know, okay, we're going to get this much this month, this, this like this, just so it wouldn't affect things too badly. It's so detrimental, but they could have upfronted everything. So when the check came in, Kate just took her money back and I got the rest, right? But it, again, embarrassing to be given and depending on other people to just to get by. Moving into a new place and having to sleep on the floor for weeks because you could not get a bed, could not afford a bed. In the early days, welfare would give you $750 for stuff, just because they wanted people out of the Salvation Army, which is $1,275 a month plus when you're living there. So they didn't want people living in the Salvation Army, so they gave you money for a bed and stuff like that. But it's supposed to last you 7 years. But then you develop bed bugs, and the mattress has to get tossed, and you have to go get new ones. And so in that period of time, it's sleeping on the floor. And what happens if you have arthritis or bone issues or things like that?
It's you don't rest.
You don't rest.
Yep.
And you end up taking out an apartment that's way over your head, but it's the only one that's available. And you pay for it, and you get kicked out again. Asking for cash instead of a check for fear of clawback from welfare. Hard to do that too, and some organizations won't do that. And taking a gift card for an honorarium when you really need cash. And you know, places like University of Manitoba has a bad habit even today of giving out gift cards instead of cash or a check. Don't ask me why.
University of Manitoba gives an honorarium by giving you a gift card.
Yes. Yep.
And a gift card to what?
Usually a Visa gift card for $50.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. But Visa is good, too. But, yeah, for certain things, some they'll give you a check for larger amounts when you have a contract for speaking or something. But then you have to wait 6 to 8 weeks to get it. University of Manitoba is one of the worst people to pay their bills. And if you're doing something on an afternoon, that they'll give you an honorarium of a $50 gift card. Still, it's they're way, way back in the dark ages on that kind of stuff.
Wow.
Having your ethics challenged every day. This is a big one. Am I going to do a dine and dash? Am I going to shoplift? You know, thank goodness, when I was homeless, I never did either of those things. I collected my beer cans and drive through change. But poverty creates crime. You know, people have to survive, right? And I still had my morals for my upbringing, I guess, that didn't allow me to. And even as a homeless, as a person housed with Char, it was, you know, there's always that, boy, I need this, you know, but thank goodness I never was really, really tempted, you know, or I never succumbed to it. So that's mm-hmm. Let's put it that way.
Well, and that makes me think about the dignity and the sort of self-respect that people have.
Yep.
And poverty kind of pushes that.
It does.
That's what you're saying. You have an ethical dilemma continually.
Continually. You really do, because we need to get by, right? And we're having a really, really tough month.
What is worse, this or that, right?
Exactly, right. Yeah. And do you follow your morals or do you, you know...
Survive.
Survive and, you know, things like this. There's a reason why there's no public washroom usage, because toilet paper goes missing constantly. It's one of those things that always goes missing, right? And something that's needed every day. But this is why people aren't allowed into washrooms. That's the key reason. Maybe
one of the reasons.
Maybe drugs or another, right?
I think so. Yeah.
But or if you use a washroom, they'll give you a toilet paper that you need when you go in, because they won't do it. Won't allow you to. Having to wait an extra, you know, a day for your check to arrive. Maybe your case manager is playing games, which happens a lot, and or it's got lost in the system, or postal service is slow, but you expect.
Not to mention, well, like now when we have a strike.
Exactly, and things are just absolutely worse, and now, then people have to go running into the office to get their pick up their checks. Having your mailbox broken into and having to go get another check that will take days to process. And so you're.
And who's more likely, a rich person or a poor person, to get their mailbox broken
entirely? You know, living on Ellis or Sargent, you'll every, once a month somebody's mailbox is broken into, right? It's just the way it is.
Yes.
It doesn't happen in River Heights, you know, all that kind of stuff. But,
yes.
Walking back and forth several times to welfare office because you made an error on a rent form and getting exhausted because you barely eaten in 10 days, that's a problem. If they don't give you one break on dotting an I or crossing a T on your green rental form, it's terrible. They just don't. And then you're running back and forth all the time. It's just archaic.
I sympathize with that. Like, I have other reasons to deal with the federal government around refugee sponsorship. Yeah. And there have been times when my impression was that people just looked for one simple excuse to say, nope, we're not doing this.
That's exactly the way I think.
And it was a simple error. Like, it was clearly an error.
Yeah.
It wasn't intentional mistake or misleading anybody. It was just a simple typo
entirely
thing, right?
And again, the bus the transit system is the same way, which we mentioned before. It's just, why make it so complicated? You know, getting disrespected by welfare and hospital care every time you go to one of these places and not getting the proper attention or care. Again, if you come across as a poor person or a homeless person, you're not going to get treated the right way. And the welfare office is what it is. They have some very good welfare folks, I mean agents or case managers, and they have some really, really poor ones. I was never treated as badly as most people because I was a caregiver to Char. I pulled her out of Salvation Army, nobody else, and they respected me for that. And I, even back in that day, I could actually speak, whereas so many people don't have that ability.
Right.
It was starting to come back.
You were good at your self-advocacy, but even more advocating for someone else.
And they respected me for that. And one of the things was is when I was when I finally got off welfare and I was working for At Home Chez Soi and Mom Away, they did everything they could to help me succeed. Because they wanted to see a former welfare recipient succeed and do well. So I would get breaks for bus passes and for other things for the people I was working, you know, I was caring for or case managing for, and other case managers wouldn't get those breaks. Mm. And so I got looked on really.
You could work the system a little.
I worked the system, yeah. And so that was kind of a cool deal, whereas other case managers didn't get the breaks I did, but I'm happy that that happened because
it was helping the people you were helping.
Yeah, and I always had that half decent relationship with them, and when we finally got off welfare, we'd just gotten glasses 6 months earlier and a couple other things, and they said, no, go get another pair of glasses. Go get, we'll extend this for you and that for you. I think if I would not have had a good relationship with them, that wouldn't have happened, you know. But but so many of you just don't even have the people skills to do that. They'll respond in an angry manner, and that just doesn't work.
And that's that trauma-informed care again.
Yes.
Yeah.
Losing self-respect and dignity while removing toilet paper from a public place.
Yes.
Yeah. Declining a coffee, and this is really key too. Declining a coffee meeting because you don't have a buck to your name and you're so desperate for the social contact. Isolation is a big deal, you know, when you're homeless and you can't afford coffee. And you don't want to say, can you buy coffee today? You know, today I have no problems asking somebody to buy coffee or telling them they have to buy it. But back when your confidence isn't there, you can't do that, right? Mm. It's just
embarrassing.
It's just embarrassing, and when your dignity is so low already, you don't want to go through that. Having people question every dollar you spend when they see you at a restaurant when you need one for a comforting meal, and this is just what we were talking about. You need it. You really need something to lift you up. Not sleeping and waking up in a cold sweat waiting for the eviction notice to be slid under your door. And in my case, it's even worse because we'll stop in about five minutes.
Sure.
In my case, because I could not let Char see that notice because of schizophrenia, right, and PTSD and all that. So I had to carry that. And then afterwards, I froze. I literally could get out of bed for 3 days because I was wondering, where are we going to go? What are we going to do?
Yeah.
And that was horrible. Spending 2 nights in a burnt-out garage, this is set me back in my recovery for a while because we had a landlord. We got kicked out, and we had a landlord who was playing hard, but he'd stand in the back alley of the building in the back and swear at people who were in the hallways, swear at people, scream at them, all that kind of stuff. He had no empathy for anybody. And we had to sleep in the back of a burnt-out garage because we had no money. But a block down from where we were. And then on Friday, we could get our stuff. And the only reason why we survived that is because my colleagues at University of Winnipeg had a little fundraiser. I don't know if I told you the story or not.
I don't think so.
They had a little fundraiser. They said, okay, you're going to come to my place on Friday. We're going to invite our friends and our family. We're going to have pizza. And you're going to come in and you're going to talk. And they had people hanging from the rafters. It was a kind of a two-level apartment in Moseley. And then people in the bathroom, in the bathtub, in the toilet, all over the kitchen and everywhere, up and down the stairs. And it was people everywhere. And they raised $1,200 for us. If they had, you know, it's like, that just broke me down. And still today, it's really emotional because they saved us from being homeless again. And I'll never forget that. It was such an amazing evening. And so that gave us our down payment. That gave us our first month and a few bucks left over for food, right?
Yes.
And so that was my friend Sarah Zell from University of Winnipeg. And
you never forget somebody who gives you that kind of a boost.
And Andrew put it together. They put this together and did all the cooking for the pizza within 3 days. Like, this is on Wednesday and Friday, they had the big thing. And it was so just a beautiful thing, right?
For sure.
And I'll never forget that. And never forget the Sarah and I still talk once in a while. But that was one of the most special moments of my life, I guess.
For sure.
Let's see. Spending 2 nights in burnt-out garage with the person you care for and 2 cats. The cats suffer trauma as well.
For sure.
Taking a place knowing that there's no way that it'll last because it's taking up 80% of your income. And months later, having to move on again because $800 a month, $250 for hydro in the wintertime because the place is not insulated properly, all that. Agreeing to do something, knowing that you'll never get it done because there's no way you can, and you're embarrassed to say why. Not being listened to because you are a person in poverty. Again, there's that stigma of poverty, and only they think you're stupid because you're poor. Then everyone's always say, you know, I had a full scholarship to Carleton back in the day. Leaping for joy after finding a 20 on the sidewalk or the streets, finding 2 cases of empty 24s, beer cans, walking on broken and tattered shoes, and feet always in pain because of neuropathy from being diabetic, which is huge. Not being able to get an abscess tooth removed, but getting dose after dose of antibiotics until the infection goes down. But having a doctor give you hell for doing that, why aren't you getting this pulled out? Well, are you going to give me the money for that? That's one of the absolute worst. Everybody knows what an abscess tooth feels like. And then have a doctor belittle you for it.
That was one of the big changes this year, was actually extending dental care.
Yes.
To adults, not just kids and seniors.
Yeah.
But to adults.
And
now, I don't know how it's going, because I know dentists are a little choosy about who they serve.
Yeah,
right?
Entirely. So. Yeah, they are too.
Not to knock dentists, but I don't think it's always that easy. But.
And then having the University of Manitoba clinic wait 6 months. You have to wait 6 months to get a tooth appointment. To get
For the clinic.
You're right.
Yeah.
Having a mental health animal die needlessly because you could not afford the vet bill.
Yes.
And dealing with the grief of the person, you know, whose cat it is. And there's nothing harsher than having the animal suffer and the human suffer at the same time. Mm-hmm. Right? I'll never forget the cat, her cat of tenure, dying, and it was laying beside her on the bed, and she said, "Oh, I should have stayed awake," you know? And she was grieving and grieving and grieving, and nothing worse than that.
No.
One of the hardest things I've ever had to deal with. having to be creative at Christmas, you know? Putting antlers on the cats and, you know, being creative with cards and being creative with gifts and things like that. We're almost there. Just a few things that, you know, poverty brings to a person's life and the trauma that follows. My knowledge comes from years of lived experience, and I found this experience much more traumatic than homelessness because of the responsibility of caring for two animals and a person with schizophrenia and PTSD and mental health issues. Never mind my own recovery.
Right.
This is foundational to my additional training on poverty dimension and mental health challenges. It's, and we're going to end with this. It's really important that others understand these issues and see the realism that exists in poverty. And folks, that's poverty dimensions. And if you want to talk more about it, give me a call or a text, 204-960-0335. And I'll be happy to talk to you about this. But it's at the AGM for the Basic Minimum Income Board. I'll be reading this out. And it's I'm happy that National Film Board is picking this up. And National Film Board has a lot of clout, and they show their movies everywhere, so it's gonna be good. But folks, come back next week. I'm not sure who we're gonna have on yet, but we'll find somebody. I have a few people in the weeds, so to speak, that want to come on. It's just that sometimes I forget and don't write their names down. And we get lost.
It's not always easy to organize for a specific time on a Friday morning, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so come on back next week, and we'll have something interesting for you to listen to. Debbie, thanks for being in on the conversation here today.
It's been always fun now.
Always great. See you next week, folks. Sorry. That went... Tu es